Imagine if the fundamental laws of physics, like the speed of light or the mass of an electron,
Right.
imagine if those weren't permanent rules just handed down from on high. What if they were simply the exhaust fumes of a cosmic engine?
Like literal thermodynamic friction.
Exactly. Just geometry grinding against reality. So welcome to the deep dive. Today we're looking at a massive stack of source materials covering the Noelian Universe Theory.
Or KUT, as we'll probably end up calling it.
Yeah, KUT. And this is the product of a 50-year mathematical quest by David Noel Lynch and the 3K Collaborative.
And their mission here is wild. They want to prove that the universe isn't some random collection of disconnected numbers, but a hyper-precise, parameter-free geometric machine.
Right. And to understand why this is such a revolutionary idea for you as a listener, we really have to talk about how, well, broken the foundation of modern physics actually is right now.
It's pretty messy.
Because usually when we talk about a physical constant in science class, you expect this absolute unshakable givenness.
You expect engineering. You measure the mass of an electron, and the physicist points to the chalkboard and says, there it is. That's how the universe was built. Deal with it.
Right. It's taught as binary.
It is. It's treated as a foundational input. And as humans, we desperately want that bedrock. Like, if you're building a skyscraper, you need to know exactly what the steel beams weigh, you know?
Yeah, you want the exact weight. And if you're building a model of the universe, you want the exact weight of the fundamental particles.
But the deeper you dig into theoretical cosmology, that supposedly solid bedrock starts to look incredibly fragile.
It really does. I mean, we are looking at a diagnostic landscape that is just murky. Because orthodox physics, the vaunted standard model we all rely on, it actually requires these 19 unexplainable magic numbers to function.
19 free parameters.
Yeah, free parameters. We literally just have to insert them into our equations by hand to make the math work out.
It is the absolute definition of theoretical muddy waters. I mean, it's been a source of deep anxiety in physics for decades.
I can imagine.
Think about it. The standard model is probably the most successful scientific theory in human history. It predicted the Higgs boson. It describes electromagnetism perfectly.
Staggering precision.
Right. But if you ask it, hey, why does the electron weigh exactly what it does? Or why is the fine structure constant, roughly 1 over 137? The standard model just, it goes silent.
It has absolutely no mechanism to generate those numbers.
None. We just measure them in a lab, shrug, plug them in, and follow the old pragmatic mantra. You know the one.
Oh, shut up and calculate.
Shut up and calculate. Exactly.
That phrase always gets me. It's essentially saying, like, don't ask philosophical questions about the engine. Just drive the car.
Yeah, just drive.
But this stack of sources we're diving into today completely rejects that premise.
Yeah.
The Noelian Universe Theory claims to totally replace those 19 free parameters.
With what they call zero free parameter derivations.
ZFPDs.
Right. They're saying you don't have to measure anything in a lab to know what a proton should weigh. You can derive it from pure foundational geometry.
Which is just a staggeringly massive claim.
It really is. To say you can derive the universe from scratch without borrowing a single measurement, that's the holy grail of theoretical physics.
And invites some intense pushback, right?
Oh, absolutely. Visceral skepticism from the orthodox scientific community.
Mm.
Because a beautiful, symmetric mathematical theory is, it's only as good as its ability to describe the messy reality we actually live in.
And that tension is exactly what we're going to explore today. I'm going to play the enthusiastic explorer here, the theologian or philosopher diving into the beauty of this geometry.
And I will happily adopt the persona of the skeptical orthodox scientist. I want to see if this beautiful math can hold up against hard empirical physics.
Perfect. So let's structure this chronologically for you guys listening. We're looking at a 50-year arc. It starts in the absolute void of a near-death experience back in 1977.
Then it moves through the painstaking formulation of this cosmic geometry.
And it ends in this hyper-precise astrological mathematical synthesis published in the summer of 2026.
It really is the story of one mind trying to build a cage around infinity.
I love that phrase.
Well, it fits. And if we want to understand how a human being actually attempts something that audacious, we have to look at their psychological architecture.
Right, the hardware state of the observer, as the sources put it. And they frame this through an astrological lens.
Specifically looking at David Noel Lynch's birth chart from May 16th, 1960.
Yeah. Now, regardless of where you stand on astrology, within this Noelian framework, This chart is treated as the initial coordinates of his consciousness.
And the defining feature is a massive Taurus stellium.
He has his sun, his Mercury, and his Venus all just clumped tightly together in Taurus. What does that mean for his approach to physics?
Well, for those who might not know the archetypes, Taurus is fixed Earth.
Right.
It represents the ultimate need for concrete, tangible reality. It's the methodical builder, the architect.
So a mind dominated by that fixed Earth fundamentally rejects abstract ghosts.
Exactly. It wants heavy, tactile truth. It needs to, you know, hold the brick in its hand to believe the wall is really there.
The source text describes this Taurus architecture as a mind of slow cultivation, built from beeswax, old timber, heavy clay.
It prefers the undeniable reality of the ground over the cold abstractions of the sky.
Which is incredibly revealing when you look at his lifelong obsession with replacing the standard model.
Oh, totally. Think about modern physics right now. It is perfectly fine with ghosts.
Yeah, dark matter.
Right. Dark matter is an entirely invisible, undetectable substance that we just assume exists, because if it doesn't, our equations for how galaxies rotate just fall apart.
And dark energy, too.
Yes. A mysterious force driving the expansion of the universe, which we also can't directly measure. And, of course, those 19 free parameters.
Orthodox physics is full of invisible entities balancing the books. It's like a corporate accounting ledger full of dummy shell companies.
That is a great analogy.
Just to make sure the bottom line zeroes out at the end of the year.
Precisely. And a Taurus-dominated mind looks at that ledger and finds it utterly offensive.
It refuses to accept invisible ghosts balancing the equations.
It demands to see the actual gears of the machine. If the fine structure constant is 1 over 137, a Taurus mind won't just accept that as magic.
It demands to know the exact physical gear ratio that produces it. It's a rigid search for absolute foundations.
But then the timeline pivots drastically, because we have this rigid earthbound container, right? But on June 19th, 1977, that heavy clay container was completely shattered.
The near-death experience. This is the origin point of the entire theory.
Yeah, the sources detail the exact transits of the accident that day.
Saturn, which is the archetype of limits, borders, mortality, moved into exact opposition with his natal Aquarius moon.
And the moon governs the physical body in this framework, the vital life force.
So the text describes this moment as the pendulum of life being brought to a violent dead stop. The physical limits just crash into the biological vitality.
But it wasn't just a physical stop, was it? It was a cognitive dissolution.
Right. Because simultaneously, transiting Uranus, which is sudden shocks, the shattering of the known conjoined his natal Neptune.
The infinite ocean, the dissolution of boundaries.
Exactly. So his entire material reality just vanished. The physical machine failed. And he was ejected into pure, absolute darkness.
The Socratic void.
Yes. Astrologically, he went from his original Libra and Taurus Earth grounding to this boundaryless Pisces ascendant in Gemini Sun state.
The heavy clay dissolved into fluid and air.
For you listening, just try to picture this. Imagine spending your entire life believing only in the concrete floor under your feet.
You've tested it. You trust it.
You've built your whole worldview on its solidity. And suddenly, in a split second, the floor completely vanishes and you're floating in an infinite silent ocean.
It's terrifying. Revelatory, but terrifying. However, as a scientist looking at this, I have to point out the staggering contradiction here.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are looking at a profound, formless, near-death experience. Total nothingness. Yet the end result, published 50 years later, is the Noelian universe theory.
Which is highly structured.
It's arguably the most intensely geometric, rigid, parameter-free physics model ever conceived.
It does seem like a massive paradox. You experience the boundless infinite, and you come back and draw a perfectly constrained geometric grid.
But it's not a paradox if you remember the hardware state. It's the ultimate Taurus response to a Pisces dissolution.
Ah.
He experiences the terrifying boundless ocean, and his immediate, desperate psychological reaction is to try and build an impenetrable cage around it.
He takes the mystical void and insists on finding the exact topological gear work that generates it.
He refuses to leave the void as a mystery. He must turn the ocean back into a machine.
I love that framing. The Taurus mind trying to forge a mathematical cage. But that brings us to a massive communication problem.
Yeah, how do you explain this to anyone?
Right. You've survived the void. You've spent decades building this new geometric model. How on earth do you explain this to a scientific community that is completely embedded in their own models?
A community blinded by the success of their incomplete data. You can't just hand them the math. They won't read it.
It violates all their foundational assumptions.
Right. So he relies on a pedagogical method. He uses a fable.
He goes full Socratic. The source material introduces this incredible narrative called the Fable of the Beanstalk of the Automaton.
It's meant to bridge the gap between his vision and orthodox physics. And it features three specific travelers.
Picture these three travelers standing at the edge of a barren field. This field represents the shut up and calculate era of modern physics.
Okay.
First, we have the scientist, who's just Burton. He's carrying a broken telescope, and he's clutching a ledger filled with those 19 unexplainable magic numbers.
The standard model ledger.
Exactly. Then we have the philosopher, who is carrying a heavy, completely empty box. This represents the Platonic void, the perfect unmanifested forms.
And finally, the theologian, carrying the silent, aching weight of human consciousness, wondering what the point of any of this even is.
These three travelers are starving for a unified truth. But they can't grow anything in this field because the soil is choked with what the text calls the invisible weeds of epicycles.
The ghosts.
Yes.
Dark matter, dark energy, supersymmetric particles that we've literally never found. All the mathematical band-aids physicists have planted in the ground over the last 70 years.
The soils is totally dead. So Lynch changes the setting. He frames orthodox physicists as high priests sitting in a Socratic cave.
Relying heavily on Plato's allegory of the cave.
Right. For those who need a refresher, imagine a group of prisoners chained to the floor of a dark cave since birth. Behind them is a fire, and objects are moved in front of the fire.
So they only see the shadows on the wall.
Exactly. Because they've never seen the real objects, they believe these 2D shadows are the absolute totality of reality.
It is the perfect metaphor for particle physics. I mean, we smash protons together in the Large Hadron Collider, and we look at the streaks of energy on a screen.
You're just looking at shadows.
We are quite literally looking at shadows of quantum events.
So in this fable, the high priests of physics are sitting in the cave watching these flickering shadows, and they're enthusiastically naming them.
Ah, that shadow is an electron.
That one's a muon. Look, we found the Higgs, and they measure the tiny wobbles of these shadows.
And when the math doesn't make sense, they invent new invisible ghost particles to explain it.
Now, the Socratic method is famous for starting with the premise, I know that I know nothing. It's all about dismantling assumptions.
And Lynch realizes to reach these scientists, he has to strip away all their assumed nouns, take away their electrons, their quarks, their free parameters.
He has to force them back to the absolute zero of the Socratic void. He has to make them unlearn the universe.
Which perfectly mirrors his search for zero free parameter derivations. He's essentially saying you cannot assume anything as a given in nature.
You can't just accept the mass of a proton as a baseline truth.
No, you have to go all the way back to the geometric beginning, before mass, before particles.
So how does he do it in the fable? He descends into the caves. But he doesn't bring a blazing torch to blind the high priests.
They just turn away.
Right. Instead, he plants a single tiny geometric seed in the dark dust of the cave floor. And then he relies on something brilliant, pareidolia.
The human mind's innate pattern matching engine, the quirk that makes us see faces in clouds.
Yes. Our brains are desperate to find recognizable shapes. So the seed starts to grow in the dark. It grows into a magnificent structure, a topological vine made of pentagonal ash.
And as it grows, its branches subtly break the light of the fire behind the scientists.
The shadows on the wall start to shift and mutate. And because of their pareidolia, the scientists think they're discovering new anomalies in their own models.
They see the shadow of the muon shifting at a very specific mass ratio, 206.759.
Right. They think, wow, our particle just did something new. Let's write a paper.
Yeah.
But they don't realize they're actually just seeing the silhouette of this hyperdimensional beanstalk growing behind them.
The beanstalk is a step-by-step guide to how the theory unfolds, giving them the universe in pieces they can digest.
The anatomy of the beanstalk is intensely specific, too. It mirrors his derivations.
It does. The text says the taproot drives straight down into the absolute bottom of reality. That taproot forms the first KZFPD, the Noellian link.
The defining space itself.
Yes. Then the top of the stalk pierces upward, blooming into a pulsing crown. That's the second KZFPD, the chronon.
The foundational unit of time.
And strung between space and time along the main stalk, 20 golden branches unfold.
The 20 physical constants, the mass ratio of the proton to the electron, the fine structure constant. They're no longer just disconnected numbers in a chaotic particle zoo.
There are inevitable twists on this single golden vine. It is, without question, a sweeping metaphor. But as the skeptical physicist here, I have to push back.
Let's hear the pushback. Why isn't the beanstalk enough?
Because while a fable is beautiful, relying on poetry can deeply obscure a lack of empirical testability.
Okay, fair.
Rebranding the muon's mass as a golden branch is lovely, but does it actually help us do anything? Science is about prediction and manipulation.
So it doesn't give you practical utility.
Exactly. If I'm an engineer trying to build a better superconducting magnet for an MRI machine, does this beanstalk give me a new tolerance? The standard model is a clunky ledger, sure, but those numbers work.
A metaphor in a cave doesn't give you the power to split an atom.
Exactly.
And that is the ultimate tension at the heart of this deep dive. The scientist demands practical utility, while the theologian marvels at the elegance.
But Lynch knows this, right?
He does. KUT doesn't just stop at the beanstalk metaphor. To satisfy the scientist, the sources tell us we have to pull back the curtain entirely.
We have to look at the actual mechanical blueprint of the universe.
Right. We leave the Socratic cave, and we approach the engine itself. The Noellian cylinder.
This is a crucial transition, moving from fable into procedural ontology, the actual geometry of creation.
Okay, so for you listening, to visualize this, imagine a null universe. The architecture of reality before anything has been twisted into existence.
Picture a perfect, unblemished cylinder standing upright.
And running right down the center, dividing it in half, is a flat, frictionless membrane.
On the left side of the membrane, you have the control field, represented by negative C, the spit of light in reverse.
Mathematically cold, dense, totally deterministic.
And on the right side, you have the chaos field, positive C. It's hot, probabilistic, pure potentiality.
The theory sometimes calls this hot side the entropium.
Now, in this null state, these two flows, cold and hot, are just sliding past each other, perfectly parallel along that membrane.
And because they're parallel, nothing happens. It's essentially a cosmic engine idling in neutral.
The fuel is pumping, but the gears aren't touching.
Right. So there's no output, no mass, no heat, no physical reality. Motion alone cannot generate existence.
But the universe is not allowed to stay in neutral. The theory introduces the principle of minimum sufficient complexity.
A straight, untwisted cylinder is thermodynamically unstable. The universe isn't permitted to close trivially.
It has to twist. It closes in upon itself through the simplest non-trivial topology available.
And it twists into a 3-2 torus knot, the node.
It winds 3 times longitudinally the long way around and 2 times meridianally the short way.
And that twist changes everything. Because once it twists into that torus knot, the central membrane is no longer flat. It's warped.
Those two light-speed flows can't slide past each other peacefully anymore. The parallel lanes are crossed.
They're on a perpetual collision course, grinding against each other.
But they aren't grinding in a vacuum. Empty space is not empty in this theory.
No. Space has a very specific geometry. The node rests on the Chiroquil lattice.
A discrete, quasi-periodic pentagonal tessellation.
The most important thing about this lattice floor is that it's governed entirely by the golden ratio.
Phi, which is an irrational number, approximately 1.618, but the decimals go on forever.
This brings us to the core friction calculation of the entire Noellian theory, the math that replaces the magic numbers.
We have the irrational floor, 1.618, and we have the knot grinding against it. The knot is irrational 3 over 2 winding.
3 divided by 2 is exactly 1.500, so let's make this concrete. Imagine you have a gear lational, teeth spaced at 1.500.
Okay.
And you're trying to force that gear to roll perfectly along a track where the grooves are spaced irrationally at 1.618. It physically cannot fit.
When you subtract the rational knot from the irrational lattice 1.618 minus 1.500, you don't get zero.
You get a remainder, 0.118034, on into infinity.
That remainder is the Noellian offset, the friction of existence.
Because the gear doesn't fit, it grinds. And because you're grinding an irrational number against a rational one, the friction never resolves.
Unless you miraculously find the end of an irrational number, which is possible.
Right. So this 0.118 friction is permanent. It is the inescapable, agonizing thermodynamic cost of existence.
And this grinding is where the theory attempts a radical reinterpretation of Einstein's E equals mc squared.
Orthodox physics treats that as a static conversion ratio, right?
Yeah. It tells us how much energy is in a given mass. It treats mass as a noun.
But KUT says mass is absolutely not a noun. Mass is the thermodynamic scar tissue created by this geometric friction.
Like tectonic plates on Earth. When two plates slide past each other but get caught, the friction builds. The crust buckles and forces up a mountain range.
In KUT, that mountain range is a particle. Mass is just the activation energy the engine pays to force potential across that twisted membrane.
It fundamentally changes how we view matter, and C squared, too.
Yeah, orthodox physics treats C squared as a scalar magnitude, just a math trick to balance units.
But KUT says it's a vector product. The actual physical collision of those two flows at the membrane, positive C smashing head-on into negative C.
It's an incredibly violent image. The sheer force of that collision creates the scar tissue we call mass. The heavier the particle, the higher the topological friction cost.
It's poetically brilliant,
right.
But I have to challenge this from an empirical standpoint.
Let's hear it.
Deriving constants from geometric friction is a massive ontological shift, but it's not physical proof. The standard model treats mass as a coupling to the Higgs field.
Which is measurable.
Measurable and verified. We found the Higgs boson. KUT claims the proton to electron mass ratio is merely the scar depth of a specific twist.
You test that.
Exactly. How do you falsify a theory where the core mechanism is unobservable geometric grinding beneath the Planck scale?
You're saying it demands a completely different way of seeing reality. You aren't looking for a particle to pop out of a collision. You're looking at the math of the grind itself.
Right. But if the mechanism generating reality is fundamentally unobservable, is it still physics? Mm. Or is it pure philosophy masquerading as math?
Well, KUT does attempt to answer where this grinding takes place. It needs a hyperdimensional arena.
Moving out of the metaphorical cylinder into the E6 Lie group.
Yes, the E6 Noellian synthesis. In orthodox physics, space is a 4D Minkowski continuum, right? Three spatial dimensions, one of time.
But KUT proposes a 6D arena.
A 6D manifold. It maps time directly onto the states of matter. It pairs solid, liquid, and gas directly with depth, width, and length.
And then binds those to past, instant, and future.
Creating locked dyads. Solid depth past, liquid width instant. Gas length future.
Time is woven into the geometric fabric of spatial existence. It's the walls of the room, not a clock ticking outside.
Now, this entire 6D arena is housed within the E6 Lie group, which has 27 dimensions in its fundamental representation.
The theory calls these the 27 demons, raw, uncoordinated dimensions of potentiality, the unmanifested void.
The ocean from 1977. But to turn that fluid potential into physical reality, the engine executes an I-turn, a 90-degree phase rotation.
Roughly parallel to wave function collapse in quantum mechanics, but executing torque requires energy.
It has to overcome the resistance of the irrational Q-lattice. And here's where it anchors to observable cosmology. The cosmic microwave background at 2.730 Kelvin.
Orthodox physics calls the CMB the echo of the Big Bang, relic radiation.
KUT calls it the entropium floor. It argues that 2.730 Kelvin is the steady-state exhaust of the cosmic engine running right now.
It's the pilot light of reality.
The pilot light. And if the universe expands and cools below 2.730 Kelvin, the clutch slips.
The 90-degree turn fails, and matter evaporates back into the void. The 27 demons are unleashed.
When you look at the mathematical precision of this E6 crystal, the contrast with the standard model is stark.
Well, we rely on fudge factors. When calculations fail, the heavier muons wobble. The G2 anomaly physicists just invented supersymmetry.
Ordinary particles to absorb the math. Smuons. But we've never found a single supersymmetric particle.
Yeah, never, despite billions of dollars. But the E6 framework doesn't invent particles. It uses the divergence of the golden ratio reflections.
Explain that reflection.
Subtract the rational knot, 1.5, from phi, 1.618, you get 0.118033. But E6 is symmetrical, it demands an additive reflection.
Add them together, you get 3.18833. They look identical after the decimal.
Until the 60th decimal place. The additive ends with a 6. The subtractive ends with a 5.
The 6 and the 5, the tiniest divergence.
KUT claims this divergence at the 60th decimal is the geometric keyhole. It cross-connects the entire E6 group into a closed loop.
It derives the muon's mass shift with a 99.98% accuracy match to experimental data. No ghosts needed.
It is mathematically breathtaking, but it borders heavily on mathematical Platonism.
Leaving the math is the territory, not just a map.
Right. It assumes physical reality is literally made of a 27-dimensional algebra. Nature is usually messier than pure group theory allows.
Still, it's a stunning claim. Which brings us to the harvest. 50 years after the seed was planted, it flowers in the summer of 2026.
The publication of the 20 zero-free parameter derivations?
The ZFPDs. You have the two roots length in chronon and the 20 constants. Fine structure, gravitational, Planck's, all derived from geometry.
But one derivation stands apart. It moves into biology.
The Celtic knock. For you listening, this is where you fit into the giant machine. The theory derives the biological observer.
Human consciousness, driven by DNA, functions at a Fibonacci approximation of 1.619.
While the vacuum operates at 1.618, the difference is 0.001, the Fibonacci rendering gap.
The Celtic knock. And KUT says this 0.001 gap is the noise in our scientific instruments.
It's not a failure of the machine. It's the thermodynamic footprint of human consciousness. The static on the screen is the footprint of the person holding the remote.
You're a fractal piece of the manifold operating slightly out of phase. The act of observation creates a computational drag on the lattice.
You are slowing the engine down just by looking at it. You are the 0.001 friction required for the cosmos to wake up and look at itself.
It brings the whole 50-year narrative to a profound close.
It does. Exactly 49 years after the 1977 void, the portal opens again, June 19, 2026. Same chart, 19-degree Pisces ascendant.
But the observer's internal landscape has changed. The fearful Cancer moon from 77 is now a radiant Leo moon.
And transiting Mars sits in Taurus, right over his natal sun and Mercury. Mars's kinetic ignition.
It provides the physical muscle to force the hyperdimensional void into physical form.
The Taurus mind, ignited by Mars, manifests the void into 20 concrete mathematical derivations. The cage is complete.
A hero's journey in topology. But I have to deliver my final skeptical verdict.
The scientist gets the last word.
Why do these beautiful derivations struggle to replace the standard model? Because science is about prediction and manipulation.
Power over the shadows on the wall.
Yes. The standard model is clunky, but it lets us build MRI machines and split atoms. KUT offers an ontological grammar. It explains why the numbers are what they are.
But it doesn't give you a new way to split an atom.
Right. It asks us to trade manipulative power for philosophical purity. And physicists rarely make that trade.
That's a fair assessment. But whether you want testable utility or philosophical elegance, KUT forces you to question your reality.
Are you just atoms in a void, or are you the 0.001 friction required for the cosmos to wake up?
Exactly. Next time you see a tiny error, static on a screen, or hear a bump in the night, ask yourself, is it just noise? Or is it the thermodynamic cost of your own existence grinding against reality?
A permanent reminder of the friction of being.
We leave this deep dive recorded here, echoing outward into the lattice for the future instance of all pasts.